It is 5 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. Defense Chief urges Russia not to return to Cold War-era policies. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter told a Berlin forum Monday there is no desire to return to the Cold War with Russia, despite Moscow's aggression in Ukraine.
We do not seek cold, let alone a hot war with Russia. We do not seek to make Russia an enemy, but make no mistake, we will defend our allies, a rules-based international order, and the positive future it affords us. We will stand up to Russia's actions and their attempts to reestablish a Soviet-era sphere of influence.
He said Washington is taking a strong but balanced approach that seeks to ensure Moscow cannot force anyone to turn towards the past while welcoming it to turn back towards the future. He holds meetings Tuesday with his defense counterparts from the Baltic states of Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. The U.S. defense chief will meet NATO defense ministers Wednesday and Thursday in Brussels to discuss plans for dealing with Russia following its annexation of the Crimean Peninsula and military support of Ukrainian separatists. Hundreds of thousands in South Sudan at risk of starvation because of ongoing war and food shortages. Owen Davies is part of a World Food Program emergency response team airdropping supplies in Jonglei State.
We've been receiving airdrops of cereal and pulses. We're also receiving oil and nutritional supplements via helicopter. Our intention is to begin distribution of the commodities tomorrow in support of roughly 6,300 people.
He says there are an estimated 4.6 million South Sudanese facing severe food insecurity. Meanwhile, a doctor at the Juba Teaching Hospital says cholera has killed at least 7 in the capital. Dr. Thomas Wellmaker says nearly 40 cases are known to exist. This is VOA News. At least 20 were killed when a female suicide bomber blew herself up in Nigeria's northeastern city of Maiduguri. Dozens more were wounded in this latest attack on the capital of northeast Borno State. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Islamist Boko Haram extremists have frequently targeted civilians at markets and bus stations in the city during their six-year insurgency. New proposals from Greece are improving the chances the debt-ridden country can reach a deal with its creditors and avoid possible default on its loans at month's end. European Union President Donald Tusk said late Monday the new Greek reforms of its pension system and sales tax are, quote, the first real proposals in many weeks.
The new Greek proposals to the three institutions are a positive step forward, according to the initial assessment of the institutions. They will be further assessed over the coming hours. Work must now proceed swiftly in the Eurogroup. Prime Minister Tsipras and the institutions will work together now so that the Eurogroup can achieve results on Wednesday evening that can be presented Thursday morning.
Greece must make nearly $2 billion in loan payments to the International Monetary Fund by June 30. To do that, it needs $8 billion installment of European Union economic bailout. Russia Monday denounced the decision by the EU to extend economic sanctions for another 6 months to keep pressure on Moscow over the conflict in eastern Ukraine. The Obama administration says Mali has a lot of work to do following the signing of a peace agreement over the weekend between Tuareg rebels and the Bamako government. U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Bisa Williams, told VOA Monday she was encouraged by the unity shown among the separatists known as the Coordination of Azawad Movements, or CMA.
What was very important for the United States to see was that all of the groups who are the members of the Coordination Movement of Azawad were represented by their secretary generals, and they all spoke with one voice.
She says as part of the peace process, the CMA will be expected to come up with people who are going to be permanently part of the secretariat, part of the working groups on various thematic working topics. She says they'll have to come up with proposals. Those proposals will have to be discussed and decided upon in what she called a consensual way. Nearly 300 have died in Pakistan's southern Sindh province over 3 days during an intense heat wave. Saturday's temperature soared to 44 degrees Celsius. The heat wave comes as Pakistanis observe Ramadan, when Muslims worldwide forego food and water. Authorities were forced to declare a state of emergency after the electricity grid crashed, causing widespread power outages in the financial heart of Karachi. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda confirms its intelligence chief has been arrested and detained in London.
We are expecting more information and clarification from the United Kingdom government. We are working with the relevant institutions to find out exactly what's going on.
Johnston Businje is Rwanda's justice minister. There's been a riot at a camp holding former Congolese militia men. Ethiopia's ruling party wins majority of seats in 2015 election. Human rights activists welcome Guinea's indictment of two generals accused of massacre. And Nigeria's president accuses former President Jonathan's government of draining the national treasury.
There will be no witch hunt, but people who have removed the money unlawfully, they are better advised to just bring it back. They don't have to wait to be questioned.
Shehu Garba is the senior advisor to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. Kenya lifts a ban on 13 remittance companies in the country. And the European Union begins targeting migrant smugglers at sea. Those stories plus Mark Ouma's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Rwanda has confirmed that its intelligence chief, General Karenzi Karake, who is wanted in Spain for war crimes, has been arrested in London. He is accused of ordering a number of massacres while head of military intelligence after the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. The BBC reports that General Karake was arrested Saturday at Heathrow Airport under a European arrest warrant. Justice Minister Johnston Businje says the Rwandan government is seeking clarification from the United Kingdom government on the reasons for Mr. Karake's arrest.
Our intelligence chief was in London for 7 days from the previous Saturday to this Saturday. And on his way back, he was prevented from boarding his flight and was not allowed to proceed home. He was retained at the airport and then transferred to another place and then appeared before a magistrate for mention on Sunday and was told he would be brought back to court on Thursday. We are expecting more information and clarification from the United Kingdom government. We are working with the relevant institutions to find out exactly what's going on. Until now, I think we are treating it as a case that is going to go to court on Thursday and as such, not able to discuss many things with the press.
This is a very serious incident, your intelligence chief. Is there any information at all? Has he been involved in anything for which another government might want to arrest him?
Right, as you said, this is the head of the intelligence of this country. So I would be very hesitant to make more comments until we get a fuller brief from our partners in the UK, what's going on.
I know the past of your country, Rwanda. Could it be that maybe they are holding him for something he might have done in the past?
Well, I expect that anybody who is arrested must have done something 1 minute ago or 2 minutes ago or something. So I wouldn't want to speculate at this point. I want to wait and see what happened, either from the United Kingdom government between now and Thursday or from the courtroom on Thursday.
Has your government lodged any complaint with the, say, the United Kingdom embassy in your country? Do you have any embassy in your country for the United Kingdom?
Yes, we do have an embassy, and I think our foreign affairs office must have a conversation on this with the United Kingdom High Commission here in Kigali as to the contents of the conversation and the direction, what happened. I am yet to get a full brief, but I know there has been a conversation on this.
Does Rwanda have an embassy in the United Kingdom?
Yes, we do. We have a High Commission there.
In reality, you have relations with the United Kingdom.
We have very cordial relations with the United Kingdom.
Justin Businje is the Rwanda Justice Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. A riot has been reported at a military camp holding more than 800 former militiamen in the Democratic Republic of Congo. They are demanding to be freed and sent back to their home areas. As Nick Long reports for VOA from Goma, the Congolese government says the situation is under control.
The ex-militiamen came from various armed groups in the east of the country and have been at the camp at Kotokoli in western DRC since they surrendered in 2013 to the army or to the UN mission. This is not the first time they have rioted at the camp. There was trouble there last year and in February, and last weekend a violent protest broke out again. The ex-combatants tried to break into an armory and looted the houses of officers in charge of the camp. UN Radio in the Congo, Okapi, describes the riot as an uprising and reports that the ex-militiamen have been refusing to negotiate with a senior army officer sent to the camp. It says they have given the government 3 days to provide them with the means to return to their home areas. But DRC government spokesman Lombe Mende insists there has been no uprising at the camp.
It's a sort of the entire
He says they have surrendered and they are not armed. They never posed a threat, he insists, adding that they are under the army's control. Human Rights Watch reported last October that more than 100 ex-combatants and their dependents had died at Kotokoli during the year, owing to lack of food and health care. Shortly after that report came out, the government announced it would close down the camp and transfer the inmates to two other camps in less remote areas, but that has not yet happened. According to UN Radio Okapi, the UN mission MONUSCO has asked for the ex-combatants to be enrolled in a process of demobilization and reintegration in either the army or civilian life. Under this process, the UN would take charge of them temporarily, but the government has not yet given the go-ahead, according to Okapi. But government spokesman Mende told VOA that it is ready to send the militiamen for reintegration and is just waiting for MONUSCO's support. He says this is a project which the government has been discussing with MONUSCO for the past 8 months. The government is waiting for MONUSCO's help so that the project can materialise. Okapi reports that the riots broke out after rumours spread that an officer at the camp had stolen $30,000 intended for the ex-combatants' rations. The radio reports that the officer was held for questioning for a week. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Ethiopia's ruling party overwhelmingly won the 2015 parliamentary elections. Martha van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa.
All but one seat was won by Ethiopia's ruling party, the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, and their affiliated parties, giving them another 5 years in power. And there is a chance the last seat will also go to the EPRDF. Merga Bekena of the Electoral Board says despite a nearly 100% win, the elections were conducted in a free and fair manner. He says it is the duty of the board to announce the decision of the people and that the mandate is in the hands of the Ethiopian people to elect their representatives. For the past 5 years, the EPRDF only faced one opposition member in parliament. There was also one independent member who largely voted with the ruling party. Following the latest election, EPRDF and their affiliated parties have 546 out of 547 seats. The last seat still has to be announced, says Merga.
The remaining one is still under the process. That is the one that is already extended by the board previously, which is located in southern nations, nationalities and peoples, regional states.
Opposition members have filed complaints about harassment and intimidation in the weeks leading up to the elections. The government has denied most of these accusations and the National Electoral Board has investigated some. Opposition leader Bayana Petros of the largest opposition party, MEDREC, says the election results are absolute nonsense. He says the results do not have any credibility and do not reflect the facts. The current lone opposition member in parliament, Girma Saifu, will not return, even if the last seat goes to the opposition. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd, and please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the new government will not engage in witch hunt of former President Goodluck Jonathan government officials. Garba Shehu Buhari's senior special assistant on media and publicity, said government officials who stole public funds must return the money before they are questioned by the new government. This came after President Buhari on Monday accused former President Jonathan's government of virtually draining the treasury and leaving the country in debt. But former Finance Minister Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala said the Jonathan administration left a much lower debt and most of it was incurred by states, not the federal government. Shehu said the president is preparing Nigerians who are expecting Mr. Buhari to do something about the challenges confronting the country.
He said it because he was responding to issues in a conversation with journalists in the State House. You know, he reported in the State House for the first time today and began work from there. And then his interaction, of course, looking at the mountain of expectations that Nigerians have, he said, look, the challenges I face are enormous against the background of the fact that this country is heavily indebted, billions of U.S. dollars, and the treasury is virtually empty. States are going without salaries. He said, in fact, even some employees of the federal government have been going without salaries.
How is that possible that a country as big as Nigeria, as rich as Nigeria, the treasury can be virtually empty?
Well, it's on account of the fact that the previous administration was on a rampage, especially towards the end of their own tenure. They ran amok, and they were just emptying the treasury, and that was it. Whether lawfully or unlawfully, that's what we have found. And so questions are being asked, and definitely something we'll have to give. And the president isn't just going to allow this to continue. So people have to give back to the treasury where they are found to have taken money unlawfully.
Does this mean that the Buhari government might go after some people in the Jonathan government in terms of the mismanagement of the economy?
Well, there will be no witch hunt. But people who have removed the money unlawfully, they are better advised to just bring it back. They don't have to wait to be questioned.
The former finance minister, Ngozi, has said that the debt that President Buhari is talking about was lower than the current government is suggesting.
Well, she's entitled to her own opinion. When they took over government from President Obasanjo, this country's debt was forgiven, wiped out zero, and they had a massive surpluses of U.S. dollar as tall as the windmill. They squandered everything, and they have left this country in massive, massive debt. They have no excuses to give for this.
Shehu, there are some people who will say it's time for President Buhari to begin to govern. Stop blaming Jonathan.
Well, what is he doing? He's already governing. Look at all of the things he's been doing. He has pursued the issue of national security with a single-mindedness that has never been seen before. Within 2-3 weeks of his administration, he has been able to build a coalition of neighbors around Lake Chad to confront the Boko Haram. He has achieved the endorsement of the G7, who have given him an unconditional support in his fight against insurgency. The African Union, only a week ago, has endorsed what he is doing. We haven't seen this kind of single-mindedness in the pursuit of anything in this country before. So General Buhari is governing.
Shehu Garabat is a senior special assistant to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Human rights activists have welcomed the indictment of two generals in Guinea for the massacre of protesters 6 years ago. But as Chris Stein reports, some question whether the indictments are aimed at a former military ruler who is planning to run in the upcoming elections.
A court in Guinea last week indicted Mamadouba Toto Camara and Maturin Bangoura, two generals accused of participating in a bloody 2009 crackdown on protesters demonstrating against military rule in a stadium in the capital, Conakry. More than 150 people were killed and dozens of women sexually assaulted in the violence. The massacre was widely condemned, and shortly thereafter, the then military ruler, Moussa Dadis Camara, was shot by an aide and had to leave the country. But Camara is planning a comeback to run against incumbent President Alpha Condé in elections set for October. Human rights activists welcomed the indictments, but some, like law student Idriss Abangoura, questioned its timing.
La question que je me pose, c'est de savoir.
He wants to know why the indictments were handed down just 1 month after Camara announced he would return to Guinea. Camara is not indicted, but attorney Tierno Amadou Uri Diallo says it is possible testimony in the cases of these generals could open up new details about the stadium massacre and Camara's culpability in it.
Il appartient au pôle des juges d'instruction.
Diallo says it is up to the judge to question the attorneys and a certain number of witnesses to know if it is possible to indict Camara, as he has done with these two generals. Protests have broken out against the government's preparations for the October polls. The opposition claims local bureaucracies are overwhelmingly loyal to President Conde, but the government has gone back on a promise to hold local elections before the presidential polls. At least six have died in demonstrations held during the past months. Earlier this month, the government and opposition leaders agreed to talks aimed at preventing further violence. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
The Kenyan government has lifted a 2.5-month suspension of 13 remittance companies operating in the country. The licenses of the companies were revoked and their accounts frozen in April following the deadly attack by Al-Shabaab militants on Garissa University, which claimed the lives of 148 people, almost all of them students. Abdi Rashid Duale is chief executive officer of Darab Shield, the largest money transfer company in Somalia. He says his company looks forward to resuming service to both the Kenyan and Somali communities.
We are very happy that the Kenyan government has lifted the suspension on Darab Shield with immediate effect. We have already started our operation here in Kenya so that we can serve the Kenyan, the Somalis, international communities that use Darab Shield.
And how did this come about? What happened after 2 months?
We have been engaging with the Kenyan officials to explain that our policy, our procedures, so that they can understand what the work we do. We operate, Darab Shield has operations over 120 countries all over the world, including United States, Europe, UK, and we have a presence in 40 African countries. So it was only Kenya that were... Our license was suspended in April. So we explained to them that, you know, the work we do, our policy and procedures, and they have allowed us to resume our operation, which we were very happy.
And what explanation did they give you for the reason they suspended the license in the first place?
You know, the central bank and the Kenyan government have obviously made their own decision in April to suspend all licensed remittance companies. It's not only the Darab Shield, they have suspended all entire remittance companies. And now, obviously, they made their own decision again. Clearly, they review our policy, our procedures, our system, the work we do, who use the Darab Shield, and so on. And we're very happy that, you know, they are comfortable with us and they have lifted the suspension. The Darab Shield serve a lot of communities. And all over the world, we offer a lifeline service to millions of people who depend on our services. And we create jobs here. You know, we play an important part in terms of development and, you know, investment opportunity. And we compete with the global companies. So companies like Darab Shield provide efficient service to many who rely on Darab Shield. And we're very happy that the Kenyan government allow us to resume our operation.
Abdi Rashid Duale is the chief executive officer of Darab Shield, the largest money transfer company in Somalia. He was speaking with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. The European Union is beginning the first phase of a naval operation to crack down on migrant smugglers, one piece of a complex puzzle aimed to stem the flow of tens of thousands of migrants crossing the Mediterranean to Europe. Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
The first phase of the European Union's crackdown against the Mediterranean migrant traffickers will start in the coming days. Speaking Monday at an EU foreign ministers meeting in Luxembourg, the bloc's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, said it aims to gather information on smugglers' activities in the high seas.
The targets, let me be very clear, the targets are not the migrants, the targets are those that are making money on their lives and too often on their debts.
More than 100,000 migrants have arrived to Europe this year, many fleeing hunger or unrest in Africa and the Middle East. Many cross the Mediterranean on rickety boats operated by smugglers. Nearly 2,000 migrants have died or gone missing at sea. The European naval operation ultimately aims to capture and destroy smugglers' ships, possibly in Libyan waters as well. But to go further, Europe first needs a UN Security Council resolution, along with the green light from the Libyan government. Unlike the naval operation, there is far less agreement in Europe about what to do with the migrants who have already arrived. EU member states are sharply divided over a quota plan for refugees and asylum seekers. Right now, Italy, Malta, and Greece are shouldering most of the burden. Acting Director for Amnesty International's European Institutions Office in Brussels, Ivorna McGowan, is waiting for more action from the EU in providing shelter and safe access for Syrian and other needy refugees.
What we really need to look at is the fact that desperate people fleeing conflict and poverty are going to continue to come, and the European Union and its member states need to ensure that they have safe and legal routes into the European territories.
EU officials say the first phase of the mission will focus on understanding who the smugglers are and how they operate. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Hosts Nigeria won most accolades at the 3-on-3 FIBA Freak Zone 3 basketball tournament, which ended in Lagos on Sunday. Nigeria beat Ivory Coast 17-13 in the senior men's final, while Ghana outplayed Togo 18-14 in the bronze medal playoff. In the senior women's event, Nigeria outclassed Togo 21-9 in the final, while Benin dismissed Ghana 13-7 to claim third spots. Liberia pipped Ivory Coast 14-13 to triumph in the under-18 boys final, as Togo edged Nigeria 13-11 to clinch the bronze medal. Nigeria beat Benin 13-3 to win the women's under-18 final, and Togo clinched the bronze medal in the three-way contest. The event attracted teams from Benin, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Liberia, Senegal, Togo, and Nigeria. In rugby, South Africa beat France 31-18 to clinch the bronze medal at the World Rugby Under-20 Championships in Cremona, Italy on Saturday. Meanwhile, hosts Zambia outplayed Nigeria 15-8 at the start of the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1C Africa Cup in Lusaka, Zambia on Monday. The three-way 15-a-side contest also features Zimbabwe. Elsewhere, Spain beat Namibia 20-3 at the IRB Nations Cup in Bucharest, Romania on Saturday. Earlier, Namibia lost 40-3 to Romania and 20-10 to Argentina Jaguars in the week-long Four Nations contest. Turning to athletics, Moroccan Amin Lalou clocked 3 minutes and 38.09 seconds to win the 1500 meters at the Bilbao International Meet in northern Spain on Sunday. Djibouti's world junior silver medalist Abdi Waiz Muhyiddin was second in a lifetime best of 3 minutes and 38.46 seconds. Moroccan Younis Esalhi prevailed in the men's 3000 meters, while Ethiopians Buse Diribe and Zwednesh Ayele triumphed in women's 3000 meters and 3000 meters which is respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Oman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least 30 people were killed when a female suicide bomber blew herself up in a crowded fish market near a mosque in Nigeria's northern city of Maiduguri. Many others were wounded as traders were observing afternoon prayers. Witnesses say a second woman fled the area and blew herself up a few minutes later, but killed only herself. That's it for this Tuesday, June 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, as Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza continues his bid for a third term, the African Union, along with leaders of the East African community, have called for the postponement of the July 15th presidential election. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, Straight Talk Africa's Shaka Sali and his guests examine if African leaders should have term limits. That's next time on VOA Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time
with David Bandy.